360 podcast, Jay Bird. It is
Steve.
It's snowy and blowy up there, from what I've heard.
Yep. Well, not today, but yeah, we got a pounding a few days ago.
What is snow? That's 12 inches of you for you that don't know what feet are.
It's crazy. Well, there's the metric system, you know.
Well, we do have Canadian listeners.
Yeah, absolutely.
They got what is that in centimeters, Jay? Anyway.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. So yeah, it's funny. We were talking about just you and I talking about it. It seemed like winter was just holding off and holding off and holding off. But you know, it sort of brings up the conversation of what's spring gonna do, which I'm sure here in very short order everybody will be scratching their heads going, early ice, late ice. You know, finally getting some winter that's going to keep it mixed up. So that's interesting. Other than that, the big Joe Booker Q&A. So many people sent in questions. We'll have to do it again here. You know, great thing for over the winter. There were too many. If I didn't get to your question, or your question sounds eerily similar to someone else's, right? I sort of copied and pasted questions that were moderately similar together, you know. So if it's breaking down new water, that's one that I remember doing. It's like, you know, apply the same thing. You're going to get the same answer. But there's a lot of similar questions that I tried to just like not retread. But I'll let you guys know. And I saved, Jay, there are so many we could even scratch the surface of.
I'm anxious to hear it.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But other than that, other than it being cold and it's winter and everybody's some few new things coming out. And I love it. Tom LeBeau there at Big Fork, he does some of the coolest stuff. You were telling me, Jane, you sent me the pictures, and they're up on the website now. Black Mamba.
Yes. And it's just a 2023 deal.
Yeah, it's a color pattern, but man, is he proud of it? And he should be. It is super cool.
It's unbelievable. They're a few dollars more than the regular paint jobs, but I mean, he put them out in all four sizes of Sandcats. And you know, I'm a Sandcat, Steve?
Yeah, you love them. Yep.
Aficionado.
Aficionado.
That's the word I'm looking for. Avatars, you've thrown these and you love them. The deep twitch darter, the flat sided one. Let's see, the shallow reef diggers and that big 12-inch. There's more coming. There's more in a couple more crankbait series, but for now that's the first wave and they're going fast.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. He does the best paint jobs in the musky business and doesn't charge for them.
It's cool.
You know, they're the most consistent stuff, and is, you know, he just, his, if anything I'd say about his stuff is the craftsmanship, the attention to detail. Me and you actually talk about this all the time. We talked about it the other day when we were just driving home, we were gabbing. It's just like he doesn't miss, and these are cool. Just a really, really cool color pattern across that whole series. Sort of got that, you know, I know it's Black Mamba, but it's almost one of those colors where it's going to work anywhere, which is neat, you know, because it's black, green, flashy. It's got...
Yeah, that's got the attention. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a lot going on. It's downright pretty.
You know what else came in this week? And you probably know about this, Steve, but we got the first two Titan Junior samples.
Yes, sir.
And got them in the mail and took some pictures of them. A few people were allowed to touch it, and they immediately got slapped on the hand and said, "That's it. Please leave the office immediately.
Do not
touch." They're top secret.
I've been obviously fishing them, and we got the Jay's got some of the color samples. These things are on their way. The feedback, I've mentioned before, but the feedback I'm getting from the handful of people that have them to throw them, holy crap.
Yeah. And there's four new colors in the entire Titan series, the big one, the original, and this new junior, which is coming out hopefully around March 1st. Okay. Yep.
You can.
And personally, the Wrecking Crew home run, that's the one I'm getting, the first one I get.
Yeah.
And other guys at the shop, great flamethrower for the waters where we fish.
Oh, yeah, I think I said if you live above Highway 10, buy as many.
Yeah, it's like,
No, it's cool, yeah. Man. I that was awesome that you guys finally got your hands on them, because it's just like you spend that much time on something and you go, oh, and you know, I got some, we got some of those out in the real world for people, and whoa. So, whoa, that's all I'll say. That's going to be good. But other than that, you know, catching some fish, doing the freezing to death, Jay, it is a game of, it is either warm or is the worst cold front on planet Earth. That's it.
So right.
It's the name of it. But anyway, we're going to phone her in this week. We got to play this thing because we go on for quite some time with Joe. So, guys, again, if he didn't answer questions, just keep sending them in. Mark it, Ask Joe. We'll get to it. We'll probably do a normal Q&A last week because we're behind on this. Whatever. We'll figure out something. But I want to go ahead and roll the thing with Book Daddy himself. Folks, you asked for it. You wanted it. The man, the myth, the legend, Book Daddy himself. He actually answered the phone. Thought he had me blocked. I'm teasing.
It's great talking with you. Sounds like we got a lot of folks that have some questions.
Absolutely, and it's who better to answer them than
I'll give it my best.
Daddy himself. First up, Heather. Hey, gang. As always, love the podcast. Have a few questions for Joe. I was wondering if he could talk about a TV episode where he was guiding some of the Menard folks and guiding them right on top of a muskie that they ended up catching. One of my friends who has been helping me learn to muskie fish refers to this episode specifically all the time, and why he will only fish for muskies on specific dates while in a moon phase. I suspect it's because he's seen Joe and he thinks of Joe's advanced knowledge and spot, you know, knowledge of fish, and that the spot prior to going to that Joe's talked about where he's seen fish but not getting to bite, I'm paraphrasing slightly here, that you're making mental notes of seeing fish, and in the show you say, I know where you are now, right? And going back and catching these fish. Do you remember the Menards episode where you sort of, you only did 4,500,
No, I don't remember. I do remember, I'll tell you an episode I do remember that sticks out in my mind is guiding the CEO and the COO of Gander Mountain back in my early days, you know, and this was like,
When you had the Joe Booker sunglasses?
Yes. This was when they had like 8 or 10 stores. You know, they were a big deal back then. You know, then they went to like 50 stores and 150 stores, whatever.
Joe,
but anyways,
do you have any of those sunglasses left in the garage that I can have? That
you know, I thought I did see some of those
is
the other
ripping,
day,
dude. I just want the box. Hey, folks, it's your old friend Joe Booker, muskie guide and cocaine dealer.
Oh, gosh. I do remember those guys, but it was really cool because neither one of them had ever caught a muskie.
Uh-huh.
And both of them figured just because they're going with me, you know, the fish is just going to jump in the boat. And you know, I mean, you're guiding. I mean, this rarely happens.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, really? So anyways, long and the short, they not only wanted to figure they're going to catch a muskie, but they figured they're both going to get wallfish. So,
and Joe, and after that, can we go for a trophy walleye?
Yeah. And kind of like one of those things that if you don't perform here, there's no sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's tough.
Well, you know, it was in October. I had the fish pretty dialed in. To make a long story short, it actually worked out exactly like they thought it would.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's really crazy. And the fish, what really makes this episode really special, mm-hmm, is that it was a double. So we had double hogs on at the same time. And so they're both posing with these fish for photographs. You know, it was all over the place on all kinds of magazines and everything, you know, the front page. And it was all the newspapers where there's like two Gander Mountain guys go out with Booker and both catch, you know, trophy muskies. They caught him. It was boom. He's fighting the one. The other guy's trying to get his line in. Boom. Oh. That fish hits. So you know, Beth and I had two big redfish on the other day, kind of the same way. But it's like, you know, that's a Chinese fire drill. You know, you got enough going on with one fish, right?
Right, much less two.
Yeah. So I guess to answer our friend's question, I guess one of the things is, you know, 90% of the time, you just go through the motions and do everything right, and put yourself in a good situation. Make sure you're doing everything right and fishing good spots. And when good times come around, you know, you score. These fish, by the way, hit on the day of the full moon, right before moonrise. It was like these two fish must have been part of a group that were working this steep shoreline with, you know, a Cisco spawn situation in the late fall. Long and the short of it is, you know, they were both caught on depth readers too. I mean, does it get any better than that? You know, So I don't know if I answered the question, but that's, you know, that's a story I do remember, and it was pretty awesome. But you know, it's there are those times you know you've seen it, you've seen me do it when you and I've been fishing. I know you do it now too. But you know, I've done this with Chaz, and you know, I've done tons of episodes where I go, this is. There's no way we can fish this spot at this time and not get a fish. And, right. Boom. And, you know, I'm not just dubbing in audio because you can see my face. Yeah. You know, you can see my lips talking during that, and then boom. But it's one of those things that, you know, there's you catch the majority of our fish that we catch. Mm-hmm. We're just out there doing our thing. And by the end of the day, you look at the scorecard and you got one or two fish, and you know, and then you look back and you say, okay, what things really work. But then there are there's that one time of the day, and especially when it's, you know, when you got storms brewing, the moon is, you know, the moon is at the right time, when you got things all kind of in your, when they're all lining up,
yes,
you know, for a knockout punch. You know, that's when you give them the left hook. I'll tell you another real quick one like that is, if folks are looking for a great episode like that, is the Hunt for Red October. Mm-hmm. You know, the hunt for Goliath. You know, the hunt for Goliath. When I'm talking about that fish, and Chaz is talking about that fish, and we know that fish is there. This, you know, the sun is setting. The moon is rising. Thunder is booming. We're on a giant fish, but it doesn't hit. And, we're about to leave. And I said, you know, something tells me, you know, we just didn't hit this right or something. So I turned back. You remember this. I turned back and I make one more cast at a little bit different angle. And I hooked it.
Yeah.
And I hooked it. Yeah. So – yeah, I mean, yeah. Wrapping it up on this question, it's just like, just keep going, keep doing everything right, no matter what. But then there's a certain time of the day when you want to be on. If you know where there's a big fish, you want to be there.
Right, and a lot of, like, I think a lot of it is just time on the water, experience, when you feel it, you know when it's about to happen.
Well, and that's what we're talking about. You know, there's watching weather, watching these cosmic influences. And I'll tell you, on a lot of days, it's way more subtle, right? I mean, and a lot of days, it's like, it's just a wind switch. It's, it's moonrise, it's moonset. And it's just one bite. It's just one strike. One of the things that, you know, our inexperienced anglers that are following your podcast and following the app and everything, one of them, they've got to come to grips with. And, you know, all these years, you know, 50 plus years later doing this stuff, it's one thing I always try to impress upon people is they get this impression, this incorrect impression that these fish are just, you know, when they go on these feeding sprees, they're just going nuts and nuts and nuts for hours and hours.
No, it
doesn't happen that way. It's one cast.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean,
it's narrow windows. It's tiny.
Most days, there are those days when you get a little bit bigger windows. Mm-hmm. But they're most days, and quite frankly, some of the most gratifying days are the days when you walk off that lake and you just kind of like, you know, you know, it's like one of those where you give your, you know, you give that little under, you know, kind of like that, what Rodgers does when he scores a touchdown, where he does that little swing. Mm-hmm. You just go, yes, you know,
right, you know,
it wasn't supposed to happen today, but you know, I, you know, we swung the bat enough and doing the right things. We got one.
That's all. Yeah. Get the first one. That's what counts.
So. Yeah. And sometimes that's the only one.
Yep. Most days that's the only one.
Yeah.
Most days. I, Joe, I have to tell you something funny. It just popped in my head because basically we're talking about calling the shot. A couple months ago, I had this client ask me, he said, okay, I've seen Joe do it in the videos, right? He'll call the shot. He'll call the shot and catch the fish. He says, does he really do that? And I said, yeah, because he just says it every cast. I was messing with him. I said, he's so annoying to fish with. Like every cast on camera. This is the cast. And I said, after 8 hours of that, it happens. I just had this guy so messed up just playing with him for a minute. I was like, no, dude. I said, he just feels it. You know, I said, you know, and I've seen you do it where, and what I'm observing, and this is just a general, you know, we say on the podcast all the time, make an assessment, look at the scenario and assess what's going on and react to it. Right.
But so you can duplicate it.
Right.
Yeah.
But when you've done it enough, you go, that feels different. Something, you know, the humidity kicks up a little bit and it's not the most obvious. You're being observant. The wind changes just a little bit, or the way the boat feels in the water changes sometimes. You know what I'm saying?
It's an experience. You experience these things through experiences.
You can't teach it.
Yeah, you can talk about this on this podcast. You can write about it. We can show videos of it. But it's when you're watching a video of us, you know, that's a few minutes of a victory that took hours, sometimes days. There's all of this battle plan and all of these things that you're lining up the tanks and doing all this stuff boom. You know, and then when it happened, you know,
everybody act excited, stopped acting. Everybody get excited after day three of pain.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I'll tell you, you know, right on that is like, it gets tougher when you're really on a bad streak. Mm-hmm. When you've gone days without a fish.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when you've gone days without a fish, you know, that victory just gets that much sweeter. And when you break, you just break the hex, you know. But you just got to keep doing things right. And, you know, there's no more fickle fish in the world than muskies. And it's just one of those things you just got to come to grips with. And the more you fish for them, the more you realize it.
Yeah, I mean, we're on down a rabbit hole. We'll tighten up on the questions here in a second. But I often tell the story about that August trip we did.
Yes.
Where we went days. And I'll just tell people to listen. I am on Lake of the Woods with Joe Bucher. Right? I'm second rod in the boat behind Joe. There was nothing for it. Grind. Do mechanics. Do the right thing. We didn't stop. We didn't cry. We didn't whine. Just everybody shut up and did their thing. And when we were hearing at the lodge, we had things turned on before everybody else because everybody else was just getting down on themselves and, you know, getting in the dumps and all this. You go, our suffering lasted far too long. However, we didn't stop. And I mean, that's really the factor I think that makes a difference in the muskie game. Are you dumb enough to do it? You know, can you shut your brain off and mechanically execute properly? I mean,
it's stubborn. You know, the stubborn, you know, yes.
That's why me and you don't argue. I know better. Joe doesn't quit. So he's a machine. Stubborn as the day is long. Moving on. We could just do a whole show off one question, Joe. Just rambling on here.
Yeah, I know.
Moving on. Kyle, what is something that has tripped you up? What's something that has stumped Joe Bucher? Give us something to think about.
Well, I'll tell you, I think the biggest thing that stumps me, and it's one of those things that really, I mean, the fish itself stumps me when everything looks right and it's not happening.
Yeah.
That always stumps
those
me.
Those are great guide trips, aren't they?
Yeah, and they're just, you know, they're frustrating fishing trips.
Right.
Even when you're not guiding, but, you know, it's one of those things, too, that the other thing that really will stump you is new water.
Mm-hmm.
What stumps me is when I love the challenge of fishing new water, but I can honestly tell you that more often than not, it takes some time. Mm-hmm. It takes some time. It's a rare occasion, especially when you don't have any prior knowledge, information, and you're not fishing with somebody that knows water.
Right.
Is to take on a piece of water and, you know, from scratch, that stumps me. But yeah. At the same time, it makes me dig deeper. And when you will learn more about anything in life, and it's not just about fishing, but you will learn more about anything in life is when you run into those situations. Now, dealing specifically with muskies, you will learn. Sometimes you will learn the most when you have the toughest fishing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And this is something that's so hard for people to get. Yes, you do learn a lot when you catch one or you watch somebody else catching them. But when you're really struggling and you're trying to figure it out, you learn a lot. You learn a lot of other things,
right?
And sometimes, I mean, I can relate it to so many instances. Whether you know whether I'm down here fishing these saltwater fish or fishing muskies, it's just all I can tell you. All I can tell our friends that are listening is that, you know, one of the best advices I can give you is to pick a body of water and really, really learn it. It takes some time. Imagine, you know, the challenges that I face, what I put them on myself is learning new water. Coming down here in Florida in the winter and just jumping on these, I'm on the ocean, I'm in the Gulf of Mexico trying to figure out what's going on without any, I never hired any charter captains or anything down here.
I get the texts every day. You could be a charter captain down there.
Hold on
for a second. Guys, I'm going to tell you something. I know you post some redfish, right?
Yeah.
I get the texts every day, guys, and this is like never-ending slobosaurus. It's crazy. But
you know what?
You spent how many years on that? 3 years, and you went from...
That's where I'm going with this, okay?
Oh, sorry.
You back that up 3 years, you know, and I caught one here, and, you know, a week or two later, I caught one there, you know, and then the second year, I caught a lot more of them. This year, you step down to a body of water,
yeah.
Year three, year four, year five, the same body of water.
Mm-hmm.
Quit jumping around. You fish the same body of water. 3, 4, 5, 6 plus years, oh boy! You know when you put the boat in the water, you already have a game plan.
Which you know, you're sort of hitting something that I think is so imperative, which is sort of the Northwoods curse, right? You've got so many options in front of you that you can just tuck and run sometimes.
Yes,
and. You know, the old adage is if it's not happening, move, which is it carries some weight and is true in some capacity. But I really think in, you know, the heyday of your guide career, I know you fished a lot of the waters, but you really made your home range on just a handful.
Well, and what I did too is you know, I spent a lot of time non-guiding time when guide trips were over trying to learn new water.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get better, you know, and so it's a never ending learning process. And you know, it's one of my old, overused adages, you know, it's the phrases that the more you learn, the luckier you get. Mm-hmm. I'm a lot luckier on red, on big reds now than I was a year ago. Yeah. I'm a lot, you know, you're a lot. Think about you, Steve, oh. You're a hell of a lot luckier now than you were 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You just know more. You know more.
Yeah. And we say luck as if it's luck, you know?
Yeah.
It's smart game planning. The biggest thing is this. And I won't tell you the observation or say what you sent me, right? But you sent me such a dialed in observation on these redfish. You told me about it. You said, I'm seeing this pattern, right?
Yep.
1 + 1 = 2. I'm going to drill them. And you're drilling them, which is, am I standing out on the boat drinking Coors Light until I can't see straight and going, why am I not catching fish? Or am I having fun with the chess game that is fishing?
It is a chess game, yes.
What's my opponent doing? What am I going to do next? I want to think 3, 4, 5 moves ahead of these fish. I want to be where they're about to be before they get there.
Yep.
And you have on the redfish thing, and guys, I know it's on a redfish podcast, but these we're talking big fish, how to put big fish in the boat. Which is, you've transposed, you're doing something I'm not going to talk about on here. You're doing something that's more of a musky thing than a redfish thing, and catching more and bigger redfish than the other, which is, this is a game of structure fishing. It's a game of observation. And it's a game of it's a, fishing is a game of humility, which is, what I'm doing is not working. Therefore, I need to make a change, which is hard.
Well, the humbling thing, fish are humbling, and muskies, no fish is more humbling than muskies, you know, but it's one of those things that, you know, comparing the way my attitude is, that you stick to it, determination, grind it out attitude, with muskies pays off huge, with these big bull reds, because I'm catching the biggest bull reds.
Yeah.
You know, I'm catching the biggest ones and the big of the bigs. It's, you know, what stumps me, I'll tell you one of the things that really stumps me is weather conditions that don't allow you to get out.
Yeah.
And no matter what you're fishing for, when you pull into on your favorite fishing trip that you're going to be going on this year, all of our podcast listeners here, you pull in and you got all these big expectations, and then Mother Nature doesn't cooperate.
Yeah.
That's a stumper. It's like, okay, now what do I do? I expected this. You talk about something that stumps me. That stumps me. I go, okay, I expected on Lake of the Woods, for example, in early or mid-August when we went a couple of years ago, to have 80s, you know, cold, maybe a cold front in the 70s, but you're going to have 80s but you're mostly going to have nice weather, and you're going to go after them, the top one and everything. We had October conditions.
Yeah. I'm out there freezing to death.
Yeah. But you know, think about that. That's a stumper.
It is. Well, let's parlay quickly, because I just saw the next question, which sort of is in the same tip, right? It's Kyle asking, and he's asking about a specific lake in Chippewa County. So not going to name names, but he's talking about a big body of water. There's a tremendous amount of structure, a tremendous amount of cover, weed lines, right? And he's asking, I don't know how to sort it out. What's good? What's dead? How do you crack the code on a big lake?
He also says
it's very kind. He says, I hope I can meet you one day. Your number one fan, Kyle. Joe Bucher will be at the Muskie Shop Bash July 15th. You can meet him there. Anyway.
Yeah. And that's one of the only, you know, it is the only show I do other than, you know, a few trade shows for my friends at JBO. That's the only consumer show that I do anymore is the Muskie Bash. I think that's a great question, and I have an easy answer for that. Is take it in chunks.
Yes.
You know, it's when you look at a big body of water and you try to take it as a whole, it's overwhelming, and you'll tend to get really frustrated And if you don't score and you have no confidence, the whole thing just kind of unravels. At the same time, what I've done, and I mean, you know, it's a classic case in point, whether, you know, again, I talked about being down here on the Gulf of Mexico and Choctahatchee Bay, these giant waters, but Lake of the Woods, you know, Eagle Lake, Lake of the Woods, mm-hmm. Loch Sewell, these bodies of water are massive. And how do you take them and break them down is take a section. Don't go be running all over God's creation on any given day trying to figure out what's going on. Take a piece of water. take a section of water. Just a section of the water. This is what we're going to fish on Monday. Take a next section of water. This is what we're going to fish on Tuesday, and so on. And take, you know, a few spots, learn them well. And with modern day electronics, it's a lot easier to do that and mark things that, you know, as soon as you have some success. One of the things I do with big bodies of water, when I'm starting to learn them, and I do this when I learn new sections of Lake of the Woods, for example, mm-hmm. is, you know, I'll start fishing and, you know, I'm certainly going to hit a bunch of spots that don't produce. Right. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I do produce one, whether mm-hmm. I see it or catch it, I start looking for things nearby.
Similar.
Yes. So for our friend Kyle here, as soon as you start to have some success, look for things nearby so that you can, you know, because usually what I have found, especially in these big bodies of water, is these muskies seem to migrate in groups to certain sections of the lake at certain times of the year, according to bait fish patterns and, you know, and some seasonal things that push them in a certain direction. And one of the key things I've learned is, man, when I get one, start hitting everything nearby, and you'll find out that first of all, you're going to learn a lot more about that whole area, and you're going to be surprised at how many other muskies are hanging around some of these other spots.
Absolutely, my dad used to say, you know how it is when you look at these big bodies of water. I think people get eager, right?
Yeah.
And I always look at this, the old hot spots maps of Eagle, and go, have we fished here? Can we try here? Right. And he goes, you don't stuff the whole pie in your mouth. That's why they call it slices.
I love it. That's outstanding. It's outstanding.
Because, you know, as a kid, you're 12, 13. Why can we not run 40 miles in between spots?
Don't.
That's why they call it slices. Don't eat the whole pie once you get sick.
Well, and you know, and to take your dad's analogy there, I'll take that little piece of pie and take your time eating it and enjoy your bite.
Get the most
of it.
Out of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Me and Ramble Fest here, 87 folks. Quick plug: Joe Bucher Blues Fest. Do we know the date?
It's always the last Saturday in July. It's easy to, you know, instead of trying to remember an exact date, I think I'll check on my calendars. I'm talking to you here, but it's an easy date to remember because it's always the last Saturday in July. And this year it is
29th.
July 29th.
There you go. Rocking, rolling. If you're up there, you're coming up to fish in the Northwoods, Joe Bucher Blues Fest.
It's full of musky fishermen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they come in. Sometimes they come in hordes too. There'd be a group. Oh, I know those guys. Yeah, there's Stephen Paul and the Muskie Shop guys. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's Chaz Martin and, you know, and the dudes. Yeah, it's full of Muskie guys. Yeah.
Blues, booze, and brews.
Yep. And barbecues.
Yes, barbecues. That's what I was missing there. Blues, brews, and barbecues. Joe Bucher.
What's next?
Jason says, and this is a loaded question. I picked this because I know the answer, but the way you convey it, because it's an urban myth. Joe, we're going to confront a Joe Bucher urban myth. Jason says, love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Hey, Joe, I'm very interested in knowing what is your favorite non-JBO muskie lure and why?
my favorite non-JBO musky lure.
Which I don't think there is one.
There isn't one.
Because I'll tell you this, and I want to hear it out of your mouth. When in the process of filming Fishing with Joe Bucher in your television show, did you ever fish non-JBO lures?
You've been with me. You know I don't.
There's not a one in your house, in your garage, in your boat.
No.
You had some back in the day where
I know I had my own company.
Before when you're guiding. And it's like you gave them to Tyler, you gave them to the dude, you threw them away, you gave them to friends.
They had big rummage sales, Steve.
Yeah.
Huge rummage sales. But and I will also say this though. There are a lot of guys making good musky lures.
Absolutely,
out there.
Yeah.
And a lot of these other manufacturers happen to be friends of mine.
Yeah, there's
you know,
we work for competing companies. We're friends. Everybody's friends.
It's a fraternity of anglers in our, you know, and what keeps us, you know, what we have in common is muskies and fishing.
Would it be safe to say your favorite dive and rise bait made by someone you know that starts with the letter T would be a Titan, correct? I'm going to save the audio clip. Hi, folks. It's me, Joe Booker. Buy a Titan. I'm messing with you.
I didn't say it. You did.
Buddy, through modern technology, we'll have a deep fake video of you pitching them for me. I'm teasing. It's, in all honesty, there's never a question. You know, it's not a matter of does Joe really throw. I've been asked that on the boat because people know we're buddies, right? Does Joe only throw your lures? And you do, and it makes sense. It's a clean boat. There's no question what's happening on that boat. It was caught on a JBO. When you say it's caught on a JBO, it is. There's nothing. Yep. You do not bring a tackle box on Joe's boat. So anyway.
Well, you know, when I was filming, that was one of the things about being a guest on the show is like, you know, you might have other lures that you like to throw, but when we're doing this, this is what we're going to throw. Otherwise, you know, go fish with somebody else. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but this is, you know, we are dedicated and focused on what we do, and quite frankly, you know, lures to me have, you know, I was raised on the premise, on the philosophy and the fundamental philosophy that lures are tools.
Mm-hmm.
The toolbox I take to work are tools I believe in, the tools that I design. And if I need another tool for the job, I design it.
Yeah.
Do I miss out on some fish because I'm not fishing big soft plastics and all this other stuff? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. But at the same time, I see an awful lot of people that are totally hung up on certain products and certain genres, yes. You know, they're hung up on things. And a decade ago, it was, you know, everybody was throwing one, you know, double tents.
Yeah.
And, you know, I purposely went in the opposite direction there because I knew that, man, I'm going to go over all these fish that didn't hit it. And I'm going to catch all those fish.
Right.
Absolutely. You know, so, yeah. So what's the next question?
Tommy. This is a question for, he says a question for Joe Bucher. How long do you stick with a bait or presentation before you make a switch? He also said he emailed me. I shot you an email back. You probably went to my spam box anyway, because he was like, you didn't email me back. But nonetheless, how long does Joe Bucher stick with a bait or a presentation style before you're like, I'm wrong? Which when we make a switch, we have to admit that our patterning was wrong. What's the process?
Well, let me stop there and also deal with Tommy on his email. If I get an email, mm-hmm. or a message on my social medias, I answer them right away.
Right. Oh, he was saying that to me, dude. That's, you may have missed that. Oh. That was he says he shot me an email.
I shot you an email,
and okay. I didn't reply. Which is like, I check. Me and you're the same way. It's like that. If you reach out to me, I'm gonna reach back. But there's also spam, and they go to your stupid boxes and, you know, all that stuff.
So, with that being said, how long do I stick with a lure? I am not, as you know, you fished me, I am not a crazy bait changer.
No.
I just take my toolbox and open it up, and you know, I have, you know, a couple of rods, two or three rods that are rigged and ready with things.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't matter that much whether, you know, what I'm fishing for. And more often than not, you know, I see a situation go, okay, this is what we need to be doing. This is what I need to be doing today. And that's why we produce videos and stuff to talk about those conditions. You know, when you got, you know, good classic musky conditions and shallow water fish, I'm going to run and gun, absolutely, you know, with the blades, with, you know, in this case, our Booker tail. But, you know, am I going to change colors? Yeah, a little bit. But I'll tell you what makes me, only thing that really makes me change colors is when somebody's really out fishing you with something else.
Yeah.
You know, and I've seen it happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it you know, it's then it's like, really, you know, these fish are definitely on a color preference thing.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you know, I stick with a pretty narrow grouping of lures, and I stick to it. Now, in the musky world, if I'm running into post frontal bluebird,
mm-hmm,
you know, stubborn fish, I rarely start with the run and gun presentation for very long.
Right.
If I'm not seeing fish, I slow things down, and I, you know, I pull out, you know, I start jerking on a shallow rater, you know, and bumping depth raters tight to cover and all that kind of stuff, because they're just not chasing.
Right.
And I got to put it, you know, I got to put it in front of their nose and give them a little more time to grab it. So, and again, that is experience.
Right.
As far as colors go, you know, on how long will I stick with a color on a lure? Boy, that's something that I probably am guilty sometimes of sticking with things I believe in too long. But every once in a while, I do see that, you know, something else is producing better than what I'm throwing, and it's generally a color. But once in a while, it's size.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see it with every fish I fish for. Every fish I fish for, you know, and it's whether it's these fish down here in saltwater or muskies, it's like one of the big things I do is either, and we, you know, you and I have done podcasts and articles and,
mm-hmm,
TV shows and videos on upsizing and downsizing.
Right.
Upsizing and downsizing. If I've got a bait that these fish are after, but they're not cracking.
Right.
I will give them bigger and I will give them smaller, and to see if if that makes them respond better.
Right.
And here's the thing. What I also do is if I go smaller, I go faster. That's one of the things I've learned is when you go downsize and you go faster, it seems like the combination of those two makes those followers strike.
Absolutely.
But once in a while, going big and giving them something outrageous, like, you know, going from a 700, for example, to twin 10s,
mm-hmm,
going from a 5-inch shallow rater to a Magnum, 9-inch.
Right.
That's what's needed sometimes is, you know, to trigger a big one to bite it instead, right, of look at it.
I've got the next one. I'm giggling at this. I didn't even see this one, Jay. Or excuse me, Joe. Rick asks, are you ready? Are you sitting down?
Yeah, I'm sitting down.
Who has the foulest mouth on the boat? Spence Petros or Stephen Paul? I've fished with them both and I couldn't tell.
It's a toss up. It's a toss up.
That is a close toss up.
It's a toss up.
Man.
But I would, it's a toss up, but I would give the edge to Stephen Paul.
The slight edge. Jimmy the Greek says it. You got a slight edge. Oh my God.
Oh gosh.
Thank you, Rick. That is the best question of the night.
You know what's funny? Like, let me give Rick one fan.
Yeah.
One fantastic story. I fished with a famous football coach.
Uh-huh.
That could beat you both.
Really?
And he was like, yeah, he was an NFL coach, and you know, he cussed so bad. The camera guys, the producer, this was before I had my own TV show. Yeah. It's early in my career. You know, this guy said, "Coach, you got to clean it up."
Right.
You know,
is that Muskie Game Plan?
That's the one.
Oh, my God. I got it on VHS, folks. So.
Beep, 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 beep.
Morse code.
Oh, my God.
That is too much. Oh, kill me. Sam, he said, "I've heard about your special top raider." I say it's Lenny, right?
The special top raider?
Your top raider.
Yes. Right. Which, you mean, gosh, I've had several.
Right.
You know, I it's one of those things that, you know,
what makes it special? What makes a top raider? Let's paraphrase. What makes a top raider the one for you?
It's so funny because when you make them out of molded plastic with tempered metal tail pieces, mm-hmm. and stuff, you think that and you know it, everything about it is you're trying to be precision perfect and so that they all turn out the same,
mm-hmm.
yet there are those different those mm-hmm. those ones that are different, and the ones that I really love, you know, and you know, it's they're the squeakers.
Yeah,
you know, they have this, they're bass buzz based are like that, you know, there's a mm-hmm. is there a little burr in the rivet that the buzz blade is going around? Is there a little burr on the, you know, on the bushing that the top raider tailpiece is going around that makes it has that little whistle, has a little, you know, mm-hmm. it's got a little whistle to it other than just giving you the plop plop. You're getting that brrr, but you're also getting that and mm-hmm. and it's you can almost, it almost is a clean whistle. And when you get those ones that whistle like that, they're deadly.
Let me ask you this, because I've talked about it one time on the podcast about aging top water baits, right?
Yep, yep.
By zip tying them to the top of your car. Which is, everybody's like, I got like 15 emails, like, you're full of it, right? And I'm going, I will take a top raider and I will zip tie it to the roof rack on my car, give it the time, and they start getting the...
Yeah, they get really loose.
They get loose and they start squeaking. If you're nuts and you're looking for it, there's nothing like about 100 miles driving around that'll make that thing sound crazy.
You know, it's so funny you should say that, because before you were years when you were just a little guy,
right?
There were and these early days of the bass tournaments, and the first buzzbait designs. These guys would hold their favorite buzzbaits out the window on their way to the tournament.
Thank you. I'm not crazy. Yes.
No, they get that baby really burning, so it was really loose.
Yep. Ben asks, Joe, massive fan of you. Thank you so much for all your years of amazing TV shows. It's meant the world to me. Awesome. Right? He says, what is Joe's feelings on old Joe lures versus new Joe lures?
I don't know what he means by that other than maybe...
people talk about differences. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. There, you know, I do get letters... On you know, the old depth readers are better than the new ones, and you know, and there is some validity to that, but a lot of it is personal preference.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a difference between the old depth readers and the ones produced today? Yes. Mm-hmm. The mold is the same. The components are the same. The hooks are better. But the plastic is different, and in the first few years, we made them out of a plastic called butyrate, mm-hmm. and it created a different buoyancy and a different sound. And some of the guys that are running depth readers like the old butyrate ones better. We can't get that material anymore to make mm-hmm. to make them like we used to. That's why we changed out, because the molder that still have the same molder. We would have the same guy's been molding the lures forever. But you know, the ABS, the high impact ABS that you're made out of today, they're more buoyant. They have more of a light, loud clicking sound to them than the old ones had more of like a knocker sound, you know, like a more foul knocker sound. And on any given day, the fish will like one more than the other. And what's really interesting is there's an awful lot of people that are still buying, that don't know any better, just buy the lures that we produce today and still catch plenty of fish on them. So it's obviously still work. But is the original Booker Tail from years ago, better than the Booker Tail made today? I mean, one could argue that the lure, the Booker Tail we make today is far better.
Mm-hmm.
We've perfected over so much time and improved, made little improvements on it, like the keel weight. Right. The original Booker Tail didn't have keel weights on them. You know, the keel weight, that we have on a Booker Tail, which has been copied. You know, that let's face it, the original Booker Tail is the most copied blade bait of all time.
Yes, hands down.
Most of the guys don't even change the way they put the bead placement and the brass body. They do everything the same.
Right.
Are the old fluted blades better than the new fluted blades? I've heard that argument. Did we make changes in the fluted blade over that time? Yeah. That we wore those old ones out.
Right.
Those old presses that cut those old blades, they're worn out. However, those old blades, they were great. They were great,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't last. They would bend, and Steve, you got some. They would bend over. Mm-hmm.
From their own cavitation.
Yeah, they would bend, and the ones today don't. They're tempered better. So, there's an awful lot of guys that don't even own any of the old ones that catch plenty of fish on them.
There's vintage strats that sound like shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Call it. There are vintage guitars that they sounded bad when they made them, and they still sound bad today.
There's vintage amplifiers, the little amp that I get so much sound out of. It's laughable.
Right. Brand new amp sounds like amazing.
Look at that little $60 Fender Mustang that all you guys go, I can't believe he's really using that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm using that.
I think a lot of it, and I think it's the same. The reason I bring up the guitar thing for the non-guitar guys, there's this mystique around vintage, that vintage is always better, right?
Yes.
They don't make it that way anymore. I personally think from having my one toe in the bait game, right? I got one tiny toe barely in the water and you're submerged over your head. Changes are not made because we want to make the bait worse. We want to make the bait better.
Yep.
Yep. Right. And I think a lot of it becomes mystique, and a lot of it becomes old guys telling old stories,
Yeah. And at the same time, there are those guys that really believe it makes a difference, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that, but it's just one of those things that, mass production of product a lot of times, especially when you're talking about plastics,
mm-hmm.
you have to. There are compromises made only because of the materials that are available,
mm-hmm.
and we had to make a change on the Death Rider way back because the guy who's molding their baits just simply wasn't going to stock that material anymore.
Right.
And, but frankly, the amount of Death Riders that were made out of, for example, just the Death Rider were made out of butyrate, versus the tens of thousands that were made of ABS.
Then people think they have one that's the old and it's really not. I've seen it. People will bring them on the boat. I've got one of the old ones. You go, no, you don't. I don't say that, but in my head I go, oh, that looks old. I'm going, if they turn yellow, the lips turn pea yellow is what I call it.
Yep.
And there's not many of them. That's the thing. So
no,
that mystique, many. And I like that question. I'm not trying to put you in a hot seat with that question, but I love to like demystify things, right? Where there's right. The Depth Rater that your dad bought in 2001 is the same Depth Rater you bought today. you know, or
there's guys that are like that about every guy's lure. I mean, look at, you know, this people have been buying Suics for all these years saying that old Suics are better. And, you know, I get it.
Same thing with Titan. I had people, well, it was better before this. I made 40 Woodwinds. You don't have one. Yeah. I promise. You know, I swear because 33 of them are in my office. You know, it's that mystique when a lure is doing well. There's a mythos about it, and I think that's the difference there for sure. There's another one that sort of hit on the same weird, and I like it where we're going. Lawrence asked, Joe, what is your biggest regret in muskie fishing? You seem to have a very hardworking, charmed muskie life. What's the one regret you have in your career thus far?
I'm stumped.
None. You're the man. Let me put it this way. Do you regret, like, you didn't spend a bunch of time on the St. Lawrence? Or is there any way you've ever, like, in your head, you're like, I wish I would have fished here?
Oh, yeah, things like, yeah. I wish I would have been one of the guys that got in on, if I could have been in on the Loch Sewell thing when it first happened. And those kind of things. There's a regret that I didn't land that big fish that I hooked on the French River.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. But you know, that was as close as I came to, you know, that was the biggest fish I ever hooked.
Mm-hmm.
By far. And, that would be definitely a something I regret especially since I hooked the fish so well.
Mm-hmm.
I had her. You know, it's so I guess, you know, but things I've done in the industry or things, you know, I mean, you know,
but you look at, okay, so it's funny, like that's a regret for you, but that regret for you turned into the no BS system.
Yes.
Which saved thousands of anglers from losing fish, which
and made better, you know, that really pushed me to push. And innovate and make better snaps and better material, better leaders. Yes.
You look at it and you go, you know, that one thing, I mean, because me and you in the boat, we've talked about her just when we're talking on the phone, which we do. And, you know, that's about the only one that comes up. But you look at it, I don't think, you know, it might be a regret, but you go, that's a moment of innovation in the industry, because before it was snaps and, like you said, snaps and inferior material where you go, no, those monsters are out there. People run into them. You ran into one. Let's fix it. So,
yep.
You know, it's an amazing, it's double edged. Ross, will you ever make a baby shallow rater that's jointed? Right?
I have the prototype done. It's been done for years. I would love to also have a magnum jointed shallow rater. Ooh. I think a magnum jointed shallow would be amazing. And I've made one. You know, I've got prototypes of them. They work great. Yes. I want to do it. Absolutely. So it's not like, yes, they, and I mean, an 8 and a 9 inch jointed shallow rater. Look out, baby. Wow.
Another rejoinder to his question. On days that are 15 to 20 mile an hour winds, right?
Yes.
Would Joe troll or would he cast?
If I have an opportunity to troll, if conditions allow me to catch them and fish areas that they would strike trolling, I would rather troll.
Right.
Yes, for sure. For sure. Joey, and by the way, I deal with that down here.
Yeah.
Big waves, big wind, you know, forget trying to cast. Forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Joey G, he says, looking for some tips for winter muskie fishing. He's on the Potomac River, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said, where should I focus? Below dams, you know, above dams, deep pools, creeks. He's had some luck on a shallow rater. Now, that's not a Joe territory where you typically have filmed stuff, but the juxtaposition is, it's November. What are you doing? What are you doing on, say, the Wisconsin River? What are you doing? Deep holes below dams. And what's the presentation, which is, you know, what's a good deep running presentations to Joeism for these fish that are outside of the typical habitat zone?
Well, you know, these winter muskies in cold water, in cold weather environments like what he's talking about, boy, I think the best way to catch those fish in that situation is still fishing live bait.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to be thinking, you got to be on the spot where the fish are.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you know, a deep pool eddies below dams, you know, a prime situation. You know, it's still fishing, you know, mm-hmm. In most situations, the guys that score big in super cold water in the winter where it's allowed, they've, and you know, they even do it with big pike. It's the same thing. It's just, if you're fishing from shore, plunk your butt there, get, you know, maximum amount of rods out with good live bait and
just wait them out. Yeah.
Wait them out. Now.
And we talked about one time, I was just going to mention though, for you Southern guys, where you go, because there's a lot about, you know, some of the JBO lineup or whatever it might be is maybe speed driven or shallow water driven. But I think the thing that's a sleeper, and you know, I model them out, which is a spending DR and the countdown DRs.
I was just going to go there. It's one of the things I've learned even down here in saltwater. When I first came down here, friends, everybody told me that in the winter, you got to fish these deep holes for these big bull reds, and you got to fish live bait, and you got to just stay there, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not fishing any live bait.
No.
I'm not fishing any deep holes. Not saying there aren't fish in those, but I'm catching these fish on suspending crankbaits. Yes. The countdown crankbaits, that those have been, and jigs, you know, those have been, and spoons. You know, one of the things I'm going to explore moving forward, even the musky world, is there was, you know, the generation before me fished spoons for muskies. That's really a lost art now.
Yeah.
And you know, they really don't even hardly market or sell
it. It's a joke anymore. Like, how many thousands of big muskies were caught on spoons?
Homer LeBlanc, man.
Yeah. The Homer Burger LeBlanc King rig. Come on.
I mean, he pounded them on spoons. So, you know, if you're not a live bait guy and you're fishing cold water,
mm-hmm.
you know, maintaining depth control and slow trolling in cold water, deadly.
Mm-hmm.
Spoon fishing. One of the things I've done deadly without down here is crank drop, a crank pow.
Yeah,
you know, it's you're keeping the lure. You're reestablishing contact with the bottom. You're moving the bait forward. You reestablish the bottom. You move the bait forward. You reestablish the bottom. And these fish that are laying deep and tight to cover, or tight to the bottom, not even necessarily even the coverage, mm-hmm. laying tight to the bottom. And the other thing is, Dan, to finish that up, is these fish stay right next to the bait. Wherever these bait fish schools are, these fish are right there.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's kind of like, they're real close to each other. You know, and in the cold water musky world, you know, that story I told in the beginning of our question and answer period about the two gander guys, you know, there was a big bait fish spawn there. I knew the muskies were there,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, you know, that's it. What's next?
One more, because we guys, if we've not gotten to it, we'll do another one of these in the future. We got way more than I ever expected. Okay, so I'll get with Joe. Won't be next week, but we'll save it for down the road, okay? So if your question's not been answered, we'll get to it. We promise. Joe loves doing these. John, Steve Paul has mentioned numerous times on the podcast that in Joe Booker videos from fishing with him, he's tighter than you think that he is to cover and structure. Joe, please explain how tight you run to cover and structure. Why? When do you get tight? When do you back off? Now, the reference for that question, Joe, and I've said it before on here, is when you watch some of these videos, like Iron Jaw, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know the Iron Godorsey, right?
Yeah.
You take me in that spot, you show me all this stuff, and you go, this is the pass. Seeing it on TV, I go, they're bombing it. And then we fish it, and we go, we're not bombing it. Right?
Right.
And there's that, the depth. You don't really have the perspective of how you're running the boat, where for me, I really had to count handle turns and, like, the time it took from your cast to something to hit the water. We realized he's not actually bombing it, and that's how you run it. Like, how tight are you running this, say, Lake of the Woods and in some of these weed beds, rock sit structures? When do you back off?
Well, yeah, I think that you got to let the fish tell you sometimes, because sometimes these fish aren't that tight to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And more often than not, what I have learned with these muskies, that, you know, especially these Canadian muskies, you know, these northern Wisconsin muskies can be that way too, is that when they're in cover, sometimes they're, these fish, if you musky lures generally have treble hooks on them, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have weeds, musky fishermen struggle with keeping lures clean when cover gets, you know, when you get jungle weeds.
Mm-hmm.
Musky fishermen struggle to keep their lures clean, and one of the ways they keep their lures clean is to back off.
Mm-hmm.
Make more casts that aren't in the cover. You see where I'm going with this?
Right.
When that happens, you know, they keep their lure clean, but they're not getting their lure where the fish are sometimes. And one of the things I did learn many years ago is, and I learned that it really hit home with me, when I was fishing the, for example, Wabagoon.
Mm-hmm.
Wabagoon and Lake of the Woods and Eagle Lake all have these slop muskies, and we nicknamed them slop, but it's really they're jungle muskies. They're up in the they're jungle muskies, right?
They're in the jungle.
They're not on the edge,
right?
You know, there's the ones that are on the edge. You can get to them with most lures.
Can I ask you a serious question? Why was Topwater Terrors not named Welcome to the Jungle then?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Right. Right. So on the Slopmaster video is one fish after another. You watch that, you probably don't get them, but I talk about it again and again. In fact, I sent you a little video short. Mm-hmm. Right before the holidays,
right,
about exactly this question, this subject. And so our friend that asked this question should visit that
on the app, yeah,
on the app, and visit that answer, because that video short, it's like 60 seconds.
Yeah, covers it.
But in 60 seconds, it's you got to get tight to cover, so you're throwing over it. And when you do that, you shorten your casts, you become a machine gun caster, not a long bomber.
Mm-hmm.
And you fish lures that are more efficient in cover. And if the cover's real, real jungly, you know, if you're in the jungle, you know, that's why we developed the whole series of Slopmaster spinnerbaits.
Yeah.
You fish them in the
situation. All day, every day. Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you're in the jungle, man, you throw treble hooks, you're just picking weeds off all day long.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes you can run topwater over them. Sometimes you can't. So, you know, that's why I developed the Slopmaster spoon, which, by the way, is being reintroduced very soon.
That's if you guys have not seen it, it's actually ridiculous. That really big, waggy side to side. It's almost like walk the dog on a straight retrieve. And that thing just swings so wide, and it just comes through He says jungle muskies, which is
that goes through the stuff that the spinnerbait won't.
Yeah,
that goes through all the grass.
Mm-hmm.
You know that gets through the grass,
reeds, milfoil,
that pigtail stuff that wraps that angel grass that wraps all over the spinner blades.
Mm-hmm.
This spoon goes right through all of that. But you know, if you're going to get tight, you got to shorten up your cast. You got to fish the right stuff. It's the same old thing. You got to go into the toolbox and get the right tool.
Absolutely. So, Joe, thank you so much for taking that much time. Guys, keep sending your questions for Joe, right? We'll give it a few weeks or whatever, or whenever it's convenient. We'll keep hammering because there's just too many. Who doesn't want to hear their question answered by you? I mean, come on.
Well, so. I love it. I love doing it with you. You know, it's one of the great things we have with the app is, and I'm excited to talk with you next time about this. But you know, it's one thing to we give these guys so much information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got that app designed so well. There's just so many places to go and things to see. But yet, answering a question personally is something we. I'm open to it.
Absolutely, and guys, if you're not watching, Joe's putting out Joe Booker Reloaded. Joe, I have my own competing show, though, right?
That's right.
Yeah, Fishing with Stephen Paul, Retarded.
you fish with the rock star now. You and the rock star. I mean, that guy's. You and Jay are. You guys ridiculous. Are like. You should have your.
Retarded. Yeah,
you guys should get on a comedy tour. You guys. Oh, you guys so stupid. Up.
But. I wanted to talk about and something that people are asking about that. We're in this era, right, of big fish. If it's not 40, 48 inches or above, it doesn't matter, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you, some of the stuff I'm seeing on Reload you've been putting on this year is like, some of it's old, but the information is not old, which that's what I've been enjoying where you go, These are from some of the old ones are from the days if there wasn't a stocked muskie on planet Earth. And you're banging 40s, 41s, 42s when those really meant something on impossible bites on low density water at a lot of times.
And you know what? And quite seriously, you know, those generation, the generations watching that's just totally locked into that.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to miss out on some of the most enjoyable parts of muskie fishing. That just go out and enjoy every darn fish you catch.
Yeah. I'm not trying to talk to a size thing, but it's like probably the best informational source of like tactic, right? From cast to catch to tactic. Who care? That's going to work on 32s and it's going to work on 52s.
You know? Absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
You're giving rock solid stuff. Where
and you know, one last thing there is you know, there's certain waters, you know, you've heard me say this, mm-hmm. there's certain waters that have made superstars out of people.
Yeah.
You know, it you put any good fisherman on those same waters, he's going to catch those fish.
Yeah, and when those waters die off, where the superstars go?
They go somewhere else. Yeah. They try to find another one. Yeah. I make a classic point here. Some of those guys that are now, you know, catching all these big fish, for example, on Lake St. Clair.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys were guiding in northern Wisconsin just a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, they left because, you know, you take Chaz Martin on Northern Wisconsin and put him on Green Bay. You think he's isn't going to catch those fish?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you some of those bodies of water, it's like that with hunting. It's the same thing with hunting. You're going to shoot big elk or big bucks or whatever that are bigger than everything else. There's only a select few places in the world that have those.
Mm-hmm.
But still. Catching muskies in general, just catching muskies and enjoying the sport is enjoying a 40. Yeah, catching a 38 and a 42 and a 35 and a 46. It's all good. It's all good.
We've got guys, and I can think off the top of my head, Jack that lives in Maine. There's no big fish.
Yeah.
Right. Jace Kumpf, great guy. He actually helps us with the PA at the Muskie Shot Bash. There's seven muskies in South Dakota where he fishes. <You know? laughs>
look at those guys that are guiding full time on the Eagle Chain in northern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
The Eagle Chain has very few fish over 47, 48 inches long. Mm-hmm. But these guys will catch 200-300 fish in a summer. You know, but their techniques are the same. They're dialed in. It's just where they fish.
Right.
And they're making a living doing what they do where they are.
Oh, this could be a whole other podcast. the state of the muskie world is what that podcast would be called. what it is. Anyway,
just enjoy it, yeah.
Guys,
you know, enjoy the journey.
Absolutely. Joe, thank you so much. Yeah, it's always just an honor and pleasure to have you on the show. I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, buddy. You bet.
Well, Jay, what do you think?
That was awesome.
That's pretty cool. Get to ask Joe. Here it is. It's Ricky from Iowa. What do I do? You
know? Well, yeah, absolutely.
You know,
he's the man.
In that long form there, so it's always awesome, guys. Thanks for sending those questions. And I know Joe, when we got off the phone when we were doing these the other night, he loved doing it, you know, so it's always fun. And so keep sending your Ask Joe specific questions. We'll save them for a future Ask Joe, you know, normal Q&A.
Yeah.
But if it's something you want to know from the Book Daddy, it was cool, though. I mean, talking about the different baits and all the stuff he's done over his career is always interesting just to hear sort of the story behind stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Jay, any new exciting things in the works? I know we talked Titan Junior when we're doing the top. If you haven't signed up for that, sign up for that. Grumblings?
Yeah.
You got some? I know we
grumblings. There's always grumblings at the Muskie Shop. Come on, man.
You know anything else coming out? I know Little Slammer. If you haven't thought about that, because I mean it's bait buying time. Titan Junior's Little Slammers.
It's the 6-inch fatty minnow slammer, and there's some people dialed in on that thing already. They know, and they're buying a bunch of them. So I've already got a reorder in, more coming. They're going fast. The new catalog, the 2023 catalog, is probably going to get shipped to us, hence shipped bulk mail out to you guys. You know, if you're a customer of ours, you get one free in the mail.
If you haven't
signed
up
soon.
For that one yet.
Yeah, if you haven't, do so.
Yeah,
fun and to look at. You know, by this coming up Friday, we're going to have another sale.
Yeah, bam.
Can't tell you what it is yet, but it'll be a cool one. So keep your eyes peeled.
We'll let you know. All right, folks. Catch you next week. Jay Bird, see you. Good night.
Good night, guys. Thank you.
Mama just caught a heart.